We're Elkhorn Computer, and we do commercial repair and setup. With Elkhorn Computer, your business will experience profitability through productivity. Give us a try. Visit elkhorncomputer.com, then give us a call. elkhorncomputer.com. Click the microphone icon for a free mouse pad.
This is the Best of Game Time podcast. Highlights of today's 1620 The Zone's Game Time in bite-sized pieces. Hear Nick's entire past show on 1620thezone.com's Game Time podcast page and live 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 1620 The Zone, the 1620 The Zone app, and 1620thezone.com.
Hey guys, thanks for downloading the Best of Podcast. In today's episode, dive into Adrian Martinez being on USA Today's Top 10 2019 Heisman candidates, my take on that, plus some thoughts on Creighton basketball. Also, Will Grier, West Virginia quarterback, sitting out of the bowl game, my take on that, and a really good conversation with head coach of the Creighton Blue Jays, Greg McDermott. Enjoy the podcast. It's kind of a weird time of year where, like, so every single day when I get ready to do the show, I have one prevailing thought. Talk Nebraska football, talk Nebraska football, talk Nebraska football, talk Nebraska, you know, like, there's just this, you gotta, that's what 99% of my audience wants to talk about. It doesn't matter if it's in the middle of July, in the middle of, like, it doesn't matter. And the hard part about right now, this is like, it's a really interesting time because, you know, season's been done for a few weeks. You know, you got this early signing period. I'm not a huge recruiting guy, but you obviously want to talk about it. And I was kind of bouncing around, reading some different things, and I stumbled on this. So, USA Today, Paul Meyerberg, he put out his top 10 2019 Heisman candidates. And there is a certain someone by the name of Adrian Martinez on the list. He is he's seventh on the list. And, you know, the list is kind of, it's Tua, Dwayne Haskins, Trevor Lawrence, Jonathan Taylor, Etienne out of Clemson, the running back. I love it. At six, he put Georgia starting quarterback. Then, you know, Herbert from quarterback Oregon, Rondale Moore, Mackenzie Milton. So I see that, and, you know, what's my take? Well, here's my take. It's kind of two-pronged. Am I surprised to see Martinez on this list or disagree with him being on this list? No, absolutely not. Martinez's talent, undeniable. It jumps off the screen. It jumps off the field. I mean, he's big time. I mean, how long did it take? I mean, was that long touchdown run against Colorado? That was in the first quarter, right? I think it was in the first quarter.
That was the first touchdown of the season.
First touchdown of the season, I think it was in the first quarter. I mean, it's like, well, I mean, it took all of, you know, half a quarter to be like, whoa. He's big time, you know? And he's in a system that will give him opportunities to flourish and make plays. So am I surprised to see him on the list? No. I've said from about the, gosh, third, fourth, fifth game of the season that I truthfully could look in the eye and say that kid one day is going to be a Heisman contender, a Heisman candidate. Well, I mean, it could be as soon as next year. But that isn't my main takeaway. My main takeaway is instead of listing off the names of the players again, I'm going to list a handful of the schools that are represented. Bama, Ohio State, Clemson, Wisconsin, Oregon, Central Florida. What's kind of the one common denominator with all those teams? Those teams are really good, right? Those teams, like, a lot of those teams are like college football playoff contenders, conference champion contenders, 9, 10, 11 win teams that we're talking about. And then there is Nebraska. With Martinez, obviously. 4-win Nebraska. Heading into 2019. And so I was looking at the list and thinking about the list. And for Martinez to legitimately be on this list and everybody go, yep, you know what needs to happen? Nebraska has to win. And to me, when I think about everybody, you know, one of the questions I feel like I've had, you know, the token media question, like, you know, what's the next step for Adrian Martinez? You know what the next step is for Adrian Martinez? Winning. All the next step for Martinez, that's the next step. I think about all that he does that would need to translate to winning. And I know, football, ultimate team sport, all that. You know, Martinez can't play defense. He can't kick. He can't tackle. But still, quarterback is kind of that. It's that kind of position, right? We love to just think about wins and losses with certain quarterbacks. And here's the thing. We all know that Adrian Martinez is going to be a stat machine. I mean, his numbers were great this year. I mean, he was, what, 16th in the country in total offense per game? I mean, those numbers, they're not going the other way. They're only going to continue to grow. And so for me, I go, can all his talents and all his stats translate to winning? That is the next step for Adrian Martinez. Can he make the runs? Yeah. Can he make the throws? Yeah. I'm not questioning those things. Can he impact winning? A few weeks ago, when Adrian Martinez wasn't voted all conference quarterback, I wasn't up in arms over it necessarily, because at the end of the day, Nebraska won 4 games. And one of the wins was Bethune-Cookman. I'm a to the victor go the spoils kind of guy. I am. And for me to put you, you know, first, second team all conference quarterback, you got to win more than 3 conference games. You just do. Now, like Stanley Morgan, because receiver's a little bit different. You know, like receiver's just a little bit different kind of a position. But for quarterback, you got to win more than 3 conference games. And listen, y'all know me. I love Adrian Martinez. Love the guy. But because I like the guy so much, I want to hold him to a super high standard. I don't want to lower the bar for him. And to me, when I look at that Heisman list and read that story, my main thought was, for Martinez to stay in that company, Nebraska has to win and win pretty big. And that is the challenge that Martinez faces. The next step in his quest to be the best quarterback he can be. Can his incredible physical talents and jaw-dropping stats translate to winning? That is it. That's it. Martinez has the talent to win the Heisman Trophy. Does Martinez have the overall impact to win big? I think I know the answer to that question, and I can't wait to see this all play out. That's the, you know, because we talk about the quarterback spot, just having that, you know, the unbelievable impact on others and all, like, that's the next step. That is the next logical step for him to me. So, you know, in the story here, this is what Paul Meyerberg wrote about Adrian Martinez. He said, here's a name to watch coming out of the Big Ten as the latest Scott Frost quarterbacking pupil to put up crooked numbers and set school records at the helm of a high-powered offense. As a true freshman in 2018, Martinez threw for 2,617 yards with 17 touchdowns with another 629 rushing yards, despite missing all of one game and being physically limited in several others with a knee injury. As seen during his coaching career, Frost quarterbacks explode as second-year starters. Martinez will be no exception. I have no doubt that he is going to continue to explode, continue to grow. can Nebraska win? That's that next layer, next step. Because that, to me, when I was looking at all those, I mean, it's Bama, Ohio State, Clemson. It's a lot of those teams. Well, they went. You know, the three dudes that were sitting in New York for on Saturday night for the Heisman, you know, I mean, those three teams win. They all won their conference. A lot of guys that have the, you know, the physical tools. How many guys can really, really impact winning? I think he can do it. And I think it's going to be fun to watch that whole thing. I mean, it's just, it is so exciting to think about. You just forget, like, you know, what Paul Meyer just wrote about, that, like, first of all, Adrian Martinez was coming off that shoulder injury. I think for a lot of people, they felt like that shoulder necessarily wasn't 100% going into the year. That's number one. He hadn't played in a game for over a year. That's number two. Number three, he hurts his knee in the first game of the season. So who knows if he was ever fully 100% for the rest of the year? I kind of doubt he ever was. I mean, he missed the entire Troy game. He only played the first half of the Michigan game. You could tell in even maybe games like Wisconsin that he didn't maybe have the quite the same pop. So there are ways you can kind of frame this thing to make you feel like, man, this guy might take a massive step next year. Not to mention the enormous steps that some of the quarterbacks under Scott Frost tutelage have made. Mackenzie Milton, Mariota, those guys that pop. So again, got no doubt that I think things are gonna progress in the right way. Just a couple of days away from Green Bay coming to town, and then Creighton still has one pretty big non-con game left, going to Oklahoma next Tuesday. True road game in Norman. Obviously, no Trey Young, and they lost a the vast majority of their crew, but. You know, Lon Kruger does such a good job. You know, they blasted Notre Dame, I think, was who they – or they blasted Wichita State. They beat Notre Dame. So Oklahoma certainly would present a set of challenges that are legit and real. I mean, you know, it'll be a good opportunity. And that's – I think Creighton's schedule has been pretty darn good in all reality. I mean, these names aren't sexy, but East Tennessee State, pretty good. Montana, pretty good. You know, a lot of, and then obviously Nebraska, Gonzaga, Clemson, like been a pretty good schedule for Creighton, and I think it's going to only help them as they kind of move forward and getting ready for conference play. And it's going to be so interesting to see. I mean, the Big East. You watched last night. Villanova lost to Penn, and you know you know what Nova looked like the past 3-4 years. I mean, this Nova team is not even close to what they've been. And there are flaws in almost every seat. I mean, you want to get a headache? Try to do Big East power rankings 1 through 10. It's even the 10th spot isn't necessarily obvious and easy. I think right now you'd probably feel comfortable at putting Marquette at number one. But boy, and then you have the injury to, AJ Reeves from Providence, going to be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. Certainly that'll trickle into a conference play. If I'm not mistaken, that means Creighton will get a crack at Providence without AJ Reeves. That's huge. You know, and that goes back to my old, Northwestern take throughout the year of like, with football, a huge part of a conference, season and how much success you have is the timing in which you play teams. You know, I think there were a lot of teams that benefited from that with the past 2 years with Creighton. I mean, a team like Marquette 2 years ago swept Creighton. And what was one of the biggest reasons why they were able to sweep Creighton? Well, they caught Creighton after the Maurice Watson injury, you know? And so timing is massively important. But you just go down the list. I mean, it felt like Georgetown could have beaten Syracuse the other day, but, you know, give up a last-second shot to battle. You know, Butler has their strengths, but they have their weaknesses. Same thing with Xavier. It is a conference right now where I was talking to some about this. You know, what record wins the conference? You know, I think if you get to 13 and 5, I think if that you feel pretty good about that score sitting in the clubhouse, if you're gonna use a golf analogy. You know, you go out there and if someone goes 13-5, I think that probably gets it done. I really do. Just because each night, I know every conference says this, but this is different where it's like, it's not that each night because the conference is so good. I think it's more because each team is so flawed and each team is going to be, you know, when you're dealing with teams that are young and finding themselves, like they can be very up and down. And the difference between the, you know, team number 2 and team number 8 is really thin. So again, I 13 wins. Oh, it surprised me. 13 wins the conference. 402-951-1620. Grab one phone call before we take a break here. Mike wants to talk about playoff expansion, which I'm always down to talk about. Mike, fire away.
All right. So before the mailbag, you said something about that in order for expansion to happen, the money would have to be right for each conference.
Probably. Yeah. It'd be a big motivator. Yeah.
Yeah, but my main question is, where would the Bulls fit into it? And you said that, I think you also said maybe in the article, I couldn't read it because I'm not subscribed to The Athletic, but that the first round would be a home game for the top seeds. But
yep.
The thing is, what about the fans that would want to travel to the game and watch your team in the playoffs? Like, how would... Wouldn't you think it might be better to just play the first round or every round at a bowl site, or how would all that work out?
Maybe. I mean, I don't, the devil's in the details with a lot of that stuff, Mike. There's no question about it. And I appreciate the phone call. I'm not going to sit here and say because I haven't put a pen to paper and figured out what all that would look like. I like the idea of campus quarterfinal matchups, and I don't know if it necessarily would. I think we act like, oh, this would decimate all the bowls. Like to me, you're talking about, like, the quarterfinal matchups just are what they are, and then you're into bowl season. Like, then you have the playoff, and you have the regular, then you, cause, you know, you're down to that, like, you're down to your four teams. And then you have your normal, then it's just how it is now. So I don't know if it necessarily would just decimate the bowls. And listen, there's already too many bowl games. And, you know, I think a part of, you know, there's always, you know, usually visiting ticket allotments for any game, you know, like there's going to be a section of tickets available at Memorial Stadium for Purdue fans, you know? And so I think that would be the same. And that's a part of, the reward of being the higher seed is, you know, you get to play at home. But no, there certainly would have to be a lot that would go into planning all this. I'm never shied away from that. It's a pleasure to be joined by the head Jay, the head man himself, Greg McDermott. Coach Mack, how are you today? What's going on?
Doing good. You know, just in the middle of finals week and trying to get a little bit better as a basketball
yeah.
team while the guys got other things on their mind and get prepared for Green Bay. But you know, looking forward to get back on the floor Friday night.
But before we kind of move forward, I want to go back to Saturday night. I'm curious what you thought after watching the film again. I mean, because in some ways you can kind of summarize the game, and they made 14 threes, they made a few crucial hustle plays, and that's kind of the ball game. What anything else stand out to you?
Well, I thought the start of the game was really critical, and you know, I think it was 11-9, so we, you know, we were right there. Given the fact that I think, you know, Palmer had hit the first three threes and, you know, we really had an opportunity there, I think, to kind of keep the crowd at bay. But then we, you know, we turned it over. We had a few empty possessions offensively that led to some transition baskets for them. But, you know, the reality of it is, you know, Nebraska's got, they've got a lot of strengths. You know, defensively, I think they're really, really good. You know, offensively, their ability to get to the basket, draw fouls, get to the free throw line, I think is really good. And when you add to it making 14 threes. You know, when they do that, they're going to be very difficult to beat. And, you know, we hit them on a night that they were really, really good offensively to go with what they do in other parts of the game.
What did you think? Because, you know, it's one thing to get your team physically ready to play. Hey, we're going to handle this ball screen coverage like this, and we want to do this. It's another thing to get a team emotionally ready to play. And you know, what is there, 8 freshmen and sophomores right now? You're a pretty young team, first true road game. What did you feel like you learned about your team emotionally, given the environment and all that?
You know, in a lot of ways, Nick, I was pleased. We got off to a decent start. You know, we made some baskets offensively, and you know, would like, we don't want Palmer making 3 threes, but sure. You know, our concern going into the game was James Palmer getting to the rim, getting in the paint, getting to the free throw line. So, you know, our guys really did early in that game what we asked them to do. We had one blown coverage on a flare screen that where he hit his second screen, but their second three. But the other two, we did what we needed to do, and we had a hand in the face, and to his credit, he hit them. What I liked is, you know, we had an opportunity down 21 in the first half where that crowd was juiced, and it could have really, really gotten away from us, and it could have been a 40-point game.
Yeah.
And to our guys' credit, you know, they stayed with it. We plugged along. We got some stops at the end of the half, and at least gave ourselves a chance, and then came out and cut it to 9 early in the second half, and had several opportunities in a 10-point game where we got a stop and we didn't come up with a ball, or we turned over an outlet pass. We missed a dunk on a simple little ball screen roll. So the guys didn't quit. And I think when you have a young team like that, to stay with it, regardless of the score and the emotion in the building, you just keep doing what you do. And, you know, we were going to need Nebraska to help us to get back into that game more than we did. And, you know, to their credit, they didn't do that.
One last thing on Nebraska. I mean, you've obviously been a part of a lot of fun rivalries, whether it's Iowa State or whatever. I mean, what just your kind of current thoughts on the Creighton Nebraska rivalry? Because it feels like it's as feverish as it's ever been.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No.
You know, it's basketball obviously has gotten better in the state of Nebraska during my 9-year tenure here. That certainly has to do with some really good high school coaching in the state, some AAU programs that have really invested and have done a good job of keeping some of our local talent here and having opportunities for them to play at a young age and go play a national schedule. And I think that's really helped basketball become better in the state. It's become more important, maybe. It's fun when both teams are good. You know, we've only had, you know, in my 9 years, there's only been one time where both of us have been in the NCAA tournament. And I think that's healthy for basketball in the state of Nebraska. And, you know, hopefully, I'm obviously concerned with one of the two teams way more than I am the other. so I want to make sure we're good and we're competitive and we're relevant. But it certainly adds to it when both teams are good, and it was a great environment for college basketball Saturday.
Greg McDermott's my guest, head coach of the Creighton Blue Jays. What have you liked, and maybe what have you found challenging about playing 10 guys, and in particular 3 really pure kind of centers too, because that can be hard to navigate.
Well, it has been difficult to navigate, and it's something that we have to look at and see if we need to trim that. Now, part of that, Nick, is by necessity that, you know, Martine was really on a kind of a minute restriction, especially the first 5 or 6 games. Jacob's coming back off that, the knee's bugging him, so he's somewhat limited. So, you know, and it's really the reason, you know, we didn't probably sit down and have more detailed talks with Christian Bishops about redshirting, just because of the injuries that Martine has had and Jacob's continued problems with his knee. We were just a little bit fearful that one of those guys goes down or 2 of those guys go down. We need to have Christian ready. So that's been the trickiest part, Nick, to be honest with you, is you know, how, you know, do you let a guy go when he's rolling? You know, are we getting enough out of that position on a consistent basis? You know, you add up their numbers and the 3 of them together, it's pretty good. But, you know, certainly Martine's better guarding the dribble, probably better in ball screen coverage than the other two. Jake's our best rim protector, and Sam probably does as good a job as anybody at scoring on the block. and he's the best passer of the three. So it's something that we're going to have to make a decision on. But you know, as of right now, I want to try to keep everybody ready, and frankly, we probably have to get Tyshawn off the floor a little bit more. Okay. I think we're going to wear him out as much as he's out there. So, you know, Caleb and Connor are going to have to come in and maybe give him a few more breaks during the course of the game.
Do you like, with Epperson and Froehling and Martin Krampel, do you like that they're all, you went through and talked about their differences. Do you like that they're all kind of different? Or is it easier to have kind of three carbon copies of the same guy and you know you're going to be able to throw them out there and it's the same look?
No, I like that they're different.
Yeah.
I think from a preparation standpoint for our opponent, you know, you've got to have your antennas up and what is this guy's strength, you know? I think that's been good for us. So, you know, I'm just looking at the stats as we sit here and 8-13, they're averaging, you know, 17 points and, looks like, about 9.5, 10 rebounds between them. So, you know, we're getting good production from that position. It's just going to be our coaching staff's challenge to try to figure out, you know, the best way moving forward.
So I'd imagine you go into each season and you probably have some idea of what each individual guy can give you and provide. Has there been a guy that has exceeded that thus far in what you've seen through, seven or eight games?
I think there are several guys. I think certainly what Tyshawn has been able to do at this point, 9 games in against a very, very good schedule, to average 18 a game. And, you know, he's almost got a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. He's shooting just short of 50% from the field and 44% from three. I mean, those are great numbers. I think Damian Jefferson's ability to shoot it from the perimeter, he's at 60% from the 3-point line on the season, and doing some good things. And then the other guy I would say is Marcus Zagorowski for a freshman, 47% from the field and 43% from three. More than 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. Given the schedule that we played for a true freshman to come into the point guard role and be able to do that, I think those three guys are probably ahead of where I thought they would be. And some of the other guys are certainly doing a good job. Davion's been at a high level defensively. His assist to turnover ratio is not where I'd like it, and I think he'll get back to that before it's all over. And Martin's going to get better as the season goes on, as he gets closer to being 100%. And, you know, I think the mental impact of having that injury 3 times is probably more significant than we're probably giving it credit for. That's a tough thing to come back from 3 times.
Mac, you got to, like, I feel like the schedule has really been good for you guys from the standpoint. Now, it's good that you're able to get through teams like Montana and East Tennessee State with a win, but, like, There haven't been too many nights off, for lack of a better term, with whether it's the games in the Cayman Islands or the games at home. It's been a challenging one.
Well, you know, except for our opener against Western Illinois, every team we played won 22 or more games last year. So you're playing programs that are accustomed to success, and you know those teams are hard to play against when you've got a young team trying to figure it out. And as you said, we've been able to win some of those games, and I think it's made us better when we've played Ohio State, Nebraska, and Gonzaga, you know, three teams that I think are top 25 teams, and teams are going to win a lot of games before it's all over this year. So you want to have a mix of in your schedule of, you know, games that hopefully you can win with relatively ease, and you can leave some of your younger guys out there and experiment with a few things. We just haven't had the luxury to be able to do that much this year. And, we'll see what happens here the next couple weeks as we lead up to Big East play. But it's been a good schedule, and I think we've grown a lot as a result of it.
Okay. Greg McDermott's my guest. You bring up the kind of final stretch here of non-con play, about 2 weeks left. Is there one prevailing thing or aspect that you really feel like as a staff you guys want to tighten up?
Well, defensively, fundamentally, we've there's been some slippage, and I think that's natural with a young team when you go from all kinds of practices and very few games to the situation where we go to the Caymans and we're there for 5 days and play 3 games, and then you come back and you play Montana, then you play Gonzaga, and then we finally had a week leading up to Nebraska where we got back to some things. But there was certainly some things that we weren't doing as well as we were early in the season on the defensive end of the floor, and we have to get back to that. And hopefully we can do that. You know, it's there's still too much thinking going on in the defensive end of the floor for us, and not enough reacting. But you know, we've got a really good team in Green Bay coming on Friday night before we go to Oklahoma, and then we've got the Division III team coming right before Christmas. So you know, we'll see what happens. We'll keep plugging along, and hopefully we'll be better once the Big East round robin starts.
Right. I'm going to save the most important question for last. What got into Sydney last night? Gee, she had 35 last night?
Well, sooner or later, genetics kick in. Nick. I mean, it happened with Doug, and it's happened with Nick. It's happened with Nick's golf swing over a period of time, and now it's finally happening with Sid. But, no, they've got a group of seniors that have been together and haven't had a lot of success, and some young players now that have stepped up. So it's Kip is doing a great job. It's been fun to watch. And I got to be there last night to watch it. So that was to beat the number one team in the state. I think team that beat them by 40 last year. So that was fun for her and her teammates.
Greg McDermott, head coach, Creighton Blue Jays. Mac, awesome stuff, man. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Nick.
I haven't tackled this story yet. I got into it a little bit yesterday with Mitch Light of Athlon Sports, but if you missed it, I think this story broke over the weekend. West Virginia star quarterback Will Grier has decided to sit out of West Virginia's bowl game against Syracuse to focus on preparing for the NFL draft. And, you know, he isn't the first guy to do this. We've seen others make the same decision. However, he is the first quarterback to do this. And, you know, it's weird. Like, the general spirit of the decision or rationale behind it, I totally get. I understand. Like, I totally get why someone like Leonard Fournette or Christian McCaffrey would sit out of a bowl game. You know, you're gonna carry it 25, 30 times. You're going to get 25 touches, the nature of the position. And then you add into the fact that, you know, for some of those guys, their stock kind of like draft stock is what it is. But a quarterback is interesting. And it's weird. Like, I'm not upset at Will Grier's decision. But have you ever had one of those things happen where you're not upset, but one of those stories you go, really? Wow. Okay. it was a really wow, okay story to me. Where you're like, really? Interesting. Okay. I mean, whenever you want to. Because, you know, Grier, he's not going to be a first-round pick. According to Todd McShay, second or third rounder. I'm not upset. I'm just surprised a little bit. Because I guess he, you know, if you're Will Grier, he probably risk rewarded this thing and thought, you know what, playing in the Camping World Bowl against Syracuse isn't worth getting hurt for. Like, is Will Grier going and tearing up Syracuse in the bowl game going to make him a first round pick? Probably not. But if Will Grier goes and gets hurt against Syracuse, do you think he falls out of the second round, third round? Maybe. Yeah. So maybe that right there in a nutshell is your answer. But at the same time, you if this were the college football playoff, he'd be playing. But it's not, you know? I mean, and he's in, Wilger's in what could be the most important 5-month stretch of his life. You know, pre-draft stuff, workouts, interviews, all that. It's money time. And if someone wants to go all in on that, I get the spirit of thought behind that. I do. But man, it's kind of different when it's a quarterback that does it. Land's different to me for some reason. Had no issue with McCaffrey and Fournette. And at the core of it, Will Grier playing in a bowl game I won't watch. I'm not going to fake outrage over him not playing in it. You know what I mean? Am I going to watch West Virginia and Syracuse play in the Camping World Bowl game? I'm not. So I'm not going to act like I'm all, but it's interesting. You know, I'm not going to throw stones. I guess I'm just surprised a bit. And again, we've said this for years now. This is going to start becoming more of a thing. Guys sitting out bowl games. And when you combine this with this, the new redshirt rule where you can play in up to 4 games without using eligibility, I think bowl games like the Camping World Bowl are going to start to get into a really weird place. I've always had a hard time figuring out how much stock to put in a lot of the bowl games outside of a handful that really matter, and you know the ones that really matter. And now I think it's about to get way, way harder. Like, what takeaway can you take? I mean, if Syracuse beats West Virginia, or West Virginia beats I'm not sure what you can tangibly take away from that. But I was thinking about, you know, Mitch brought this up. If you're Dana Holgorsen, it could be kind of nice to get a chance to work the backup quarterback into the mix for next year. And that's what's always kind of been the hardest part about certain bowl games. Is this the period at the end of the sentence that is this season, or is this like the start of a new season? I don't know. So, I mean, listen, there's a first time for everything. Greer is going to be the first quarterback to sit out of a bowl game, and I highly doubt he'll be the last. I mean, hell, you look at a guy like Nick Bosa, after his injury in the middle of the year, he just stopped going. He just said, I'm done. I'm going to go to a training facility. I'm not even going to be around at Ohio State. I'm just going to go start focusing on getting ready for the pros. And so that's what makes, because what's hard now is, let's say West Virginia loses this game and maybe the Big 12 loses some other games. People are going to want to use these bowl results as indictments on the conference. And yeah, I mean, that's what's so hard about lumping it all into one. You kind of need to go case by case a little bit. You know, like the year whoever LSU played in the bowl game, the year Leonard Fournette didn't play. I mean, I would say Leonard Fournette not being out there for LSU is kind of a big deal. I would say Will Greer not being out with West Virginia at quarterback spot probably going to impact things a little bit. So it just makes it hard. It makes it really, really hard.
Thank you for listening to today's Best of Game Time podcast. Hear Nick's entire past show on 1620thezone.com's Game Time podcast page and live 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 1620 The Zone, the 1620 The Zone app, and 1620thezone.com.